If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we were joking about the location of Ayman Zawahiri, and I said, I'm pretty sure he's in Afghanistan. I did not expect him to be in Kabul. So taking this man out is indeed a counterterrorism coup on many levels. I think three major points are important here. First, he was very comfortable, as we discussed at that time, communicating. And having him being killed in Kabul, which is 100% under control of the Taliban, in a house owned by the acting interior minister of Afghanistan, Sirajuddin Haqqani, kind of puts the any arguments anyone may have ever had, whether or not there is a symbiotic relationship between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, to rest. That's the first point. Secondly, it is quite astounding that the American administration seems to have an information network, not only to identify him, but also to identify him, as they said, in April, and then decide for the perfect moment for the strike. This means if you have a high profile target, usually you strike immediately because you don't know if the target is moving, whether you can track it. They knew they had an information network that was reliable enough that they could continue to track him even if he does move. So that is very impressive, I have to say. The third one is it is really a big hit to Al-Qaeda because Al-Qaeda as the Islamic State global network functions on personal buyout. Now, a lot of senior Al-Qaeda members have been dying over the last couple of years, and there's really only a small group left who could fit that role, because it's not just about having a figurehead, it is about having a credible figurehead, because as I explained to you in several of our conversations before, the network runs on personal loyalty. So all the heads of all the affiliates of Al-Qaeda need to pledge personal loyalty to the head of Al-Qaeda. And there's not many individuals left who would be that senior and that acceptable around the globe, from Al-Shabaab in Somalia to Abu Sayyaf in Southeast Asia to Jinim in West Africa to the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan and Afghanistan. So really a very interesting day today, I have to say.
And that is a part of what my next question is. You talked about loyalty and swearing the personal bayat. Who is in line, most likely to be the next leader?
Yeah, I mean, the person that everyone is talking about is an individual called Saif al-Adel, himself an Egyptian again, apparently, according to my former colleagues at the UN, currently in Iran, which is quite an interesting development. And he is the one that everyone seems to assume that is going to be the next one. He's also, while being in Iran, if the Iranians have him under control and would let him leave, this would be a very interesting development on the Iranian side as well. But he's close. At least he could come to Afghanistan because there's no other regime that protects Al-Qaeda. I mean, this was a hit in Kabul. We don't know what Al-Qaeda affiliates or foreign fighters are doing in Oruzgan, or those foreign fighters that the Taliban have now integrated as special forces in their Afghan military. We have no visibility on that one, right? And that's where the actual attack planning is going to be conducted, not on a balcony in Kabul. The other contender could be a guy called al-Masri, the head of Huras al-Din, because of course, you know, Al-Qaeda in Syria is not doing badly. They have Hayatari al-Sham with Jolani, but he personally had distanced himself publicly after, in inverted commas, asking for permission from Zawahiri to do so a couple of years ago from Al-Qaeda. So he's out. But al-Masri, as the head of Huras al-Din, which is a splinter of HTS, Hayatari al-Sham, could be another proponent. Obviously, the most successful foreign affiliate at the moment, as far as size, financing, and frankly, military successes is concerned, is either Al-Shabaab, but they don't have any designs beyond Somalia, or Jinim, the Al-Qaeda affiliate in West Africa. It's called, led by a guy called Agali, but he's a Tuareg. And I cannot see the Al-Qaeda network being led by an African at this point, at least. But, you know, this is a momentous moment for Al-Qaeda. It is really important to stress, however, that whatever happened in Kabul today will not change anything that happens tomorrow, next month, or next year in West Africa, the Sahel, or anywhere else that these Al-Qaeda affiliates operate, because Zawahiri and his successor was and will not be involved in the operational planning anymore. That time is over. That ended really with Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, you talked a little bit earlier about your impressed how impressed you were with the U.S. network, the ability to do what this, what it was, what was necessary to pull this off. But I'm interested in knowing what you think the message to the Taliban is, and especially Siraj Haqqani. With them
now, they have a little bit of explaining to do, right? So, because I mean, they, to be very frank, what they actually ever said, and this is the only thing they ever committed to, is that they will not allow Afghanistan to be used for the planning of terrorist attacks abroad. They never mentioned Al-Qaeda. They never mentioned being separated from Al-Qaeda. I'm not sure what they said in confidence to people from the U.S. administration, right? There's still a discussion whether or not they committed to anything on the counterterrorism front here. But I mean, this is the acting interior minister, the chief security officer of the country. This is way beyond Abbottabad. I mean, at least the Pakistani government could say, well, it's the town where we have our military academy, but lots of people live there. What would they even know? This was a house owned by the acting, let me say that again, the acting interior minister of the country. And he's harboring the world's most wanted terrorists. I mean, however you explain that one away, I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
And so what kind of consequences most likely will they have to face as a result of this? Because that is enormous.
Let's make this very clear. Is your, you know, Department of Homeland Security secretary hosting Al-Zawahiri in his private home and having his son-in-law with him, right? So I don't know. What we had discussed previously is that we had relaxed sanctions, especially on the counterterrorism front with Afghanistan, quite widely in order to make sure that humanitarian funds flow into Afghanistan. I had at the time already said to open the floodgates may have been a necessary measure at the end of last year where you had a real standstill of liquidity flowing into Afghanistan. Luckily, that has been ameliorated to a certain point. I'm not saying Afghanistan doing well, but I am saying having massive amounts of money flowing in and out of the country in order to enable humanitarian aid without appropriate controls is, after today, requiring a little bit more explanation than was necessary yesterday.
One of the things that the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and other affiliated and associated terror groups have always said is that the Western militaries and intelligence communities and agencies, they have the watches, but we have the time. I think that role got reversed here, and I think maybe there is a message in this to them because this search has been going on for 20 years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's to get a little bit off the headlines because of the horrible situation of the war in Ukraine, inflation, and other really major concerns, including climate change. But the war against terrorism is still going on because these networks have not stopped. It is not like we had a reversal of Al-Qaeda's announcements. Quite to the contrary, Zawahiri was continuing to announce before he died on a regular basis since the Taliban takeover that he wanted to have more attacks. And it really on that point, also a point of caution. Just because Al-Qaeda hasn't conducted a major attack since the Taliban takeover in 12 months is not necessarily an indication that Al-Qaeda is not able to do so in the future. If you remember, the Taliban had this symbiotic relationship with Al-Qaeda in the 90s as well. The takeover of the Taliban was 94. The first Al-Qaeda attack was 98, the bombing of the embassies in East Africa. Then they had the call in 2000. Then they had 9/11 in 2001. Their style of terror attacks are long, prepared, spectacular, surprising attacks. On a much smaller scale, we had discussed at the time the Pensacola attack, where the AQAP member was a member of the Saudi military while being a member of a terrorist organization without being recognized for 10 years before he was transferred to America and had the ability to strike. They are very patient because they are not really after some sympathizer wielding a knife in the streets of Berlin. That's ISIL, the Islamic State. That's their style of terror attacks. Whatever, whoever, whenever, in what form is good for them. Al-Qaeda wants to have these spectacular attacks. They take time. We have only left just a year now in a couple of days. They still have to rebuild their infrastructure. They still have to start planning, thinking up ideas, training operatives. And this is all long term. So we are not out of the danger zone. And while this is now a problem for the network to keep together, not more than one Al-Qaeda member died on Saturday. Just one, Zawahiri. All the others are still there. All the others are still after attacks in the West. And we should not keep our eye off the ball or have a sense feeling of security on an operational level, despite the quite impressive ability of the US government to obtain information and patiently wait until conditions are perfect for a strike.
Hans-Jacob Schindler, Senior Director of the Counter-Extremism Project, JJ Green, WTOP News.